Today we get to wrap up our teaching series, Finding God in the Wastelands. And so remember, a wasteland is those dry times in your faith. It's those moments where you're hurting, where maybe you're suffering some, but those times where you're struggling to see God show up. And a wasteland is those moments. And what we want to do is we want to make sure that we're getting out ahead of those wastelands so when they come, we know how to handle it. Because when it's happening, man, sometimes it hurts too much or it's too much of a struggle to actually figure out how to navigate through that. So we're trying to get out ahead of it. You heard Maggie talk about those cactuses storing water. We're trying to store up so when that wasteland comes, we're ready for it. So today we're going to jump right into it. And here's where we're going to start. That loss and loneliness create a wasteland. I'm going to move this up. So give me 1 second. Loss and loneliness create a wasteland, because we have those moments where things hurt, where we lose something. Maybe we lose a relationship, a friendship that we had for years. We lose a loved one. And what's that do? That creates that wasteland. It creates that dry spot, because now we feel like we're going through it alone. We feel like there's no one else beside us. Let me get us started by asking this question. Kids in the room, I see some kids in here. Have you ever asked mom or dad for a pet? Can you show me a hand if you ever asked mom or dad for a pet? Right, adults in the room, you remember pleading with your parents for a pet ever? Did that ever happen? Of course it did. We all asked our parents for pets. Why? Because there's something special about pets. I don't know why. Like, it's just fun it's fun to pet. It's fun to play with. And so we asked mom or dad for a dog, or we asked them for, some of you asked for a cat. I don't know why you would ask for a cat, but some of you did that. Some people, like my kids, they're desperate right now. They're like, what? Like, just a fish. And I'm hesitant, and I'll explain in just a minute why I'm hesitant, but they're asking for anything that we could possibly get, because it's fun to have around. But the reason I'm hesitant is because when I was a kid, I begged my parents for a dog. I can just remember going to them, and my parents had every excuse. Parents, you know their excuses, right? And they had every excuse as to why they couldn't get, hey, it costs too much to have a dog. It's a lot of work. There's a lot of responsibility. And I remember I was probably like 7 or 8, and I said, you know what? I'm going to take away some of those excuses. And so they kept throwing how much it cost, and I said, well, I'm going to pay for it. And I remember I saved every penny I had, because I was going to buy my own dog. And I saved every penny. Dude, I would go to, I'm dating myself here, but the payphone, every payphone we walked by, and I would check that change thing so that way I could find a quarter or a penny in there. And I saved any penny I found on the ground, any money that I got for my birthday or Christmas, it would all go towards this dog. Every single cent. I never spent a thing, because I wanted this dog so bad. And my parents finally, somewhere along the line, I don't know if it's because they saw how serious I was, or they just had a change of heart, or maybe they were ready themselves, but they said, hey, you know what? We're going to do it. We're going to get a dog. And I mean, that was like the best day ever, hearing about this dog that I was going to get. And I was so excited about it. And so we got a dog. Here's my dog. Oh, help me out, Ella. So, anyways, I had a dog. There she is. So, this is my Dalmatian. I don't know. My parents said I want a Dalmatian. I think Dalmatians are kind of lame dogs, but they said I was like begging for a Dalmatian. And so we got this Dalmatian, and I named her Katie. I'm not good at naming dogs, apparently. I don't know why Katie, but that was the thing. I was like, let's name her Katie. And they're like, okay, whatever. Like, but that's a bad name. Like, that's not ferocious. No one's scared of Katie. When you say Katie, sick 'em, they're like, who cares? Right? But this is my dog, Katie. And man, I spent every moment I could with this dog. I remember when we got her, I was on my hands and knees so that way I could be eye level with her and I could just spend every moment. And she was probably like, whose kid is this? Get this kid away from me, right? Because I gave her no space, no personal bubble, right? And I would just be there with her every minute. And then I would do all those responsibilities. Man, I took her outside. I'd clean up after her mess. I would make sure that I could do anything. That way my parents could never come back and say, see, this is what we were talking about. You didn't take responsibility. I was 9 years old right here, right? And they said, you know, I want to make sure. And so there were things my parents didn't even know happened, but I made sure that they never found out, so that way they could never say, this is why we shouldn't have had a dog. Man, I loved Katie. I loved that dog so much. And look how cute she is, right? Even for a Dalmatian. I love this dog. And what happened, 6 months go by, and over that time, my parents start to notice something about me. And what they noticed is that as Katie got bigger and bigger, I got more and more sick. See, my eyes would swell up, they would itch, they would burn, they would hurt. My nose was always running, I was always congested. And what they found out is I'm like super allergic to dogs. And so my parents had to make what, parents, I hope you never have to make this decision. They had to make the hard decision, and they said, we have to get rid of Katie. And as a 9-year-old, I finally had my dog. We had to give it away. And I can remember the day like it was today. See, I can remember the family that came to take Katie. They backed their station wagon up our driveway. Our house sat up on a hill, and so the driveway was a hill. And they backed their station wagon up, and they opened the hatch back out. And I remember it was just too much for me to take. And so I went inside, and I just had to get away from it. But what I think, I don't know if my parents know this, but I went up into their room. Because, see, their room had a window that overlooked the driveway. And I watched them get this family settled, and they loaded up Katie's stuff and her crate and all her toys. And then they put Katie in the back of that station wagon. And I remember just watching that from my parents' window and just crying my eyes out while it was happening. Man, it hurt so bad. And then I watched them close that hatchback. And I watched them drive off down the street. They took my dog away. And I just remember asking, why does this have to happen? I did everything that I was supposed to do. I saved up every dime. I took care of everything that needed to happen. I cleaned up after that dog. Why are you taking my dog away? Man, that hurt. It still hurts to this day, even though that dog is long gone. That dog's dead, right? Like, that dog is gone. But it hurts. That's what we're going to be looking at as we walk into this book of Ruth together today. So that's why I'm going to ask you to go in your Bibles. Ruth, you're going to look in your Old Testament all the way towards the beginning of your Bible. You're going to see Joshua, Judges, then Ruth. It's just 4 chapters. It's really small. If you see 1st or 2nd Samuel, you've gone too far and come back a little bit. But we're going to be in Ruth, and here's where we're starting, right in verse 1. In the days when the judges ruled Israel, a severe famine came upon the land. So a man from Bethlehem in Judah left his home, and he went to the country of Moab. And he took his wife and his 2 sons with him. The man's name was Elimelech. Say that 5 times fast. And his wife was Naomi. So Elimelech and Naomi, there was a famine. And they had to move because of the famine. Now, sometimes we read this and we say, well, hold on, like they're moving. But think about this. Like, there is a shortage of food. This is how things worked back in the day. This was common practice. If there was a famine, that didn't just mean like remember when quarantine hit and we were going to the grocery store? I'm like, no, man, there's no food around here. But this is for years at a time. So they would move their family to where there was food. We do the same thing today. We just don't call it moving because of a famine. We call it relocating, right? And so sometimes there's a shortage of jobs. And what do? We relocate to where there are jobs. So I know it sounds a little weird that they're moving out of the country, but it's very similar to what we do today. So they're on their journey. What happens? Elimelech, the husband, the father, he dies. And what do we see? Naomi was left with her 2 sons. So Naomi has started to enter this wasteland, right? She has to leave her home behind. She has to leave her home country behind, her community. And then we find out that her husband dies as well. But it goes on. It says the 2 sons married Moabite women. One married a woman named Orpah, not Oprah, but Orpah. And the other, a woman named Ruth. But about 10 years later, what happens? Both sons died. And we see that this left Naomi alone, without her 2 sons, and without her husband. And she is alone. Can you imagine? See, what happens when we are in that wasteland of loss, when we're in that dry place of loss and loneliness, there's a void in our lives. There's a gap that's created there. And what happens, why it becomes a wasteland, is because we don't know how to fill up that gap. And so it becomes filled with our hurt and with our suffering instead of maybe other things that are going to help heal that gap. And this is where Naomi is. Can you imagine losing your spouse and your kids within a period of 10 years? Some of you, you've experienced this. I can't imagine. I don't know if you're like me. Sometimes I think a little bit weird. But there are times where like my mind goes down that road and I'm like, man, what would happen if I lost Lindsay? And then I have to stop myself because I don't like going down that road and it hurts. And I'm like, oh my goodness, that would be a mess. That would be a disaster if I didn't have my wife with me. And it hurts even thinking about it. Sometimes I have nightmares and I lose one of my kids or one of my parents and I wake up and I'll literally wake up crying because it's something that scares me so bad. This is reality for Naomi. She's in a mess of a wasteland. And so what happens is she continues down this road. They're in Moab for quite some time. And then they realize that the famine is ending in Judah. And so she says, hey, you know what? I'm going to go back to my homeland. I'm going to go back to where I'm from. And so she's talking to Orpah and to Ruth about it. And then she realizes, well, wait a minute, they're not from there. They're from here. Why don't they just stay here? So she actually suggests to them, why don't you stay here? And then you don't have to make this journey back with me. This is your place. You can start a family. You can restart your life here. And she insists about it. And they insist and they decline. They say, no, we have to go with you. We have to make sure that we're going forward with you. We're in this together. We've been through so much together. We're family. And we get to this point, and it says that they were weeping together because of how painful this conversation was. And Naomi kept insisting, and they kept declining. And it finally says Orpah decided that she was actually going to stay behind, and she kissed her mother-in-law goodbye. But Ruth clung tightly to Naomi. Look, Naomi said to her, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. You should do the same. But Ruth replied, and she said, don't ask me to leave you and turn back. Wherever you go, I'll go. Wherever you live, I'll live. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. And then she says, wherever you die, I'm going to die there, and I'll be buried. May the Lord punish me severely if I allow anything but death to separate us. When Naomi saw that Ruth was determined to go with her, she said nothing more. You know that person where you're trying to convince them of something, and you realize, like, you're never going to break through this, right? And you just like, you give up and you say, okay, I'm not going to try anymore. That's where she was at with Ruth, because Ruth saw her need for people in her life, and Ruth clung to her and said, listen, I'm going where you're going. There's nothing that you can say that's going to sway me from this. There's nothing that you can do that's going to convince me otherwise. And here's why I think this happened. I think that Ruth saw Naomi in her wasteland. I think she saw the hurt and the pain and the suffering that was there. And what Ruth knew is that suffering is too much to take on yourself. And so Ruth said, I'm going to be there with you. I'm going to come alongside you. We're going to journey this together. And Ruth saw what I think brings us to our bottom line, that when you're in the wasteland is when you need community the most. See, some of you are in that wasteland of loss or loneliness, and you continue to just kind of push through it yourself. See, isn't that what we do sometimes when we lose someone close to us, when we're hurt, is we tend to remove ourselves often from situations, and we say, hey, you know what, you guys go out, I'll stay back behind. You go over there, I'll stay at my home. I'm just going to hang out in my room alone. I'm not going to get out of bed because it's too hard to. And what do? We start to remove and seclude ourselves from the community around us. And see, I think Ruth was starting to notice that about Naomi, that Naomi just wanted to seclude herself. She just wanted to go off on her own. And Ruth said, no. She said, we're going to be in this together. Because what you have to know about Ruth, what you got to remember about Ruth, is that she's in the same wasteland. Right? It wasn't just Naomi that lost. Ruth lost her husband as well. And she saw the need that they have for each other and the need that they have for other people in their lives. And Ruth said, listen, I know that you're going, but I am going with you. So, the two of them continued on their journey. When they came to Bethlehem, the entire town was excited by their arrival. They said, hey, Naomi's back. Isn't that Naomi? And what she says, she says, don't call me Naomi. Instead, call me Mara, for the Almighty has made life very bitter for me. you've run into this, where maybe you've tried to come along someone hurting, and you try to talk to them, and they say, don't you talk to me. You don't know what I've gone through. You don't know what I'm going through. You don't know what life's like for me right now. And they push back. See, that's where Naomi's, that's how we know Naomi is in this wasteland. She says, I went away full, but the Lord has brought me home empty. I went away and I had my husband. I had my kids. I had everything that I could possibly need. And God took that away from me. You can see her hurt. You can feel her hurt. And what do we see? She says, why call me Naomi when the Lord has caused me what? Suffering and tragedy. Remember, I mentioned that void, that gap that's made when we have that loss. And Naomi's void is just filled with suffering. That's where she's at. That's why we know she's in her wasteland. But she has to get to this point, and that's what Ruth is noticing. She has to start filling that void with some other people in her life. It doesn't mean that they're replacing those people. It doesn't mean that never happened and you never experienced it. But it's just recognizing your need for people in your life. Now, Ruth 2, let me just summarize this really quick. Here's what happens. Ruth goes, and they're back in Judah. They're back in the town of Bethlehem. They're working. Ruth is working at this field. The field belongs to this man named Boaz. Hold on to that name, Boaz. And so she's working in this field, and Boaz sees Ruth from a distance, and he goes and he asks some of the workers. He says, hey, who's that girl working in my field? And they say, oh, that's Ruth. That's Naomi's daughter-in-law. Remember Elimelech? And so he goes, oh, yeah, because Boaz was what's described as a close relative of Elimelech. So he knows the story. He knows what happened. And so he just didn't, he needed to, you know that saying, I need to connect a face to the name. And so he hears that and he says, okay, I know who Ruth is. I get what's going on. And so then he goes and he talks to her and he makes sure that she's cared for, that she has everything that she needs, that she can continue to work at his field. And he says, listen, I'm going to make sure that no one treats you badly here. I'm going to make sure that you're taken care of in just the way that you need. And Ruth, she's so excited. She goes back to Naomi and she's like, Naomi, you wouldn't believe. I met this guy named Boaz and he was so kind to me. He was so nice to me. And like, what a great experience that was. I get to keep working in his field. Now we get into chapter 3 and it says, one day Naomi said to Ruth, and I want you to see this, the script flips right here. My daughter, it's time that I found a permanent home for you so that you will be provided for. She says, it's time that you start to bring other people into your life. It's time that you start to introduce other people. You're in that wasteland as well. And here's how we know that the script flips. Because Naomi now is starting to think about Ruth and her need for people and her desire for relationship in her life. And so Naomi says, Ruth, here's what I'm sensing about you. Here's what I'm noticing about you. You need some other people in your life. And so then she says, Boaz is a close relative of ours. He's been so kind to you by letting you gather grain with the young women who work in his field. Tonight he will be winnowing barley, meaning separating barley at the threshing floor, where they separate the barley. And then she has this idea. She says, now do as I tell you. Now here's what I like to do when I read this. Think of the basketball coach with the whiteboard, right? He pulls out the whiteboard and he says, here's the plan, here's the play, here's what's going on. And so Naomi starts walking Ruth through this. She says, you're going to take a bath. It's going to be not just like a quick bath. You're going to scrub really good, right? You're going to make sure that you get super clean. You're going to put on perfume, but not too much perfume, because you know what happens when you put on too much perfume. People think it's nasty. You want to put on just enough so that way you're turning heads when you walk by. You're going to dress in your nicest clothes. You want to gain some attention, Ruth. That's what you want to do. And then she says, you're going to go to the threshing floor, but don't let Boaz see you. I'm going to create a diversion. I'm going to go over on the other side. I'm going to spill some coffee, make a big scene, and you're going to stay there until you see that he's finished eating and drinking. And then she says, once you get in, here comes the recon. You're going to notice where he lies down, Ruth. You got to pay special attention. You got to figure out where exactly Boaz lays down. You don't want to confuse him with anyone else, because it's going to be dark when this all happens. And go and uncover his feet and lie down there. And then, once that's all done, you've completed your mission, and he will tell you what to do. Operation Stinky Cheese is in full effect, right? And so she says, listen, this is how it's going to happen. Now, let's stop right here for just a second, because let's take in what Naomi's asking Ruth to do. She's asking her to go get bathed, dress up, put on perfume, put herself like way out there, and then go into this dude's room while he's sleeping and uncover his feet and lay down next to his feet. I don't know about you. I don't like feet. Like, that sounds horrible. But here's what's crazy. Ruth does it. And here's why I want to draw so much attention to this. Is because sometimes when we're in our loss, when we're in our loneliness, when we're in that dry place, when we're in that wasteland, the furthest thing that we want to do is put ourselves out there like that. And if Ruth follows through it, Ruth could hear Naomi say that and say, Naomi, you go uncover that dude's feet. Like, I'm not going anywhere near that. But she does it. And she goes there and she follows that plan. And she puts herself out there. Because remember, relationships, listen, I'm all about when someone's hurting, we should come alongside people. I hope you all hear that. We need to come alongside people in their hurt, in their loss, in their loneliness. We need to make sure that we're reaching out to people. But there's also a reality that relationships are two-way streets. And people can't come to you time and time and time and time and time and time again. At some point, you need to take the step to actually reach out to someone and ask them for that relationship, ask them for that time in your life. And that's what Naomi is asking Ruth to do. Hey, this is way out of your comfort zone. But would you go up to this guy Boaz, because this is going to be a good thing for you. And like I said, she does it. So after Boaz had finished eating and drinking and was in good spirits, he laid down at the far end of the pile of grain and went to sleep. And then Ruth came quietly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. Around midnight, Boaz suddenly woke up and turned over, and he was surprised, obviously, to find a woman laying at his feet. I would be too. And he says, "Who are you?" And she says, "I'm your servant Ruth." And then she says this. She says, "Share the covers," right? She says, "Spread the corner of your covering over me, for you are my family redeemer." Some of your versions use the term kinsman redeemer. See, and this is just pointing back to an Old Testament law that Boaz, because of his relation and because of who he was actually a person that could help carry her family name forward. And so her family didn't have to end when Elimelech's son died and when her husband died, but her family could continue to move forward. And so Boaz was a great fit for that. And what she did by going in there and laying next to him was she let him know, hey, I'm looking for this type of relationship. I'm looking for you to be this kind of person in my life. And what we see in Ruth chapter 4, which we're not going to take a look at this morning, but what you'd see is that Boaz says, yeah, this sounds like a good plan. And he says, let me just check on a couple things and then let's move forward in this relationship. Everything checks out the way that it's supposed to. And see, they start their relationship, but it started with Ruth doing something that probably made her super uncomfortable to take that step, to move forward and to ask Boaz, would you be this kind of person in my life? But it all comes back to this, that when you're in your wasteland, it's when you need community in your life the most. Now for Ruth and Boaz, it turned into a romantic relationship. Ruth and Naomi was not a romantic relationship. Romance or not, that's not what matters. What matters here is that you have community in your life. You have people in your life. And I would even say, I want to go this far, it matters who you put in your life. And so here's where we're going to end. 2 Timothy chapter 2. I want you to see this because this is so important that it really does matter who you put in your life. Here's what Paul says to Timothy. Remember, Timothy is a pastor in training. He's a young guy. He's trying to make sure that he's not just leading himself, but he's leading this whole town of Ephesus together. And he says, run from anything that stimulates your youthful lust, Timothy. And what's he say? He says, instead, you need to pursue righteous living, living your life in a way that makes you more like God. You need to pursue faithfulness, growing your relationship where God is the first and foremost in your life. You need to pursue love. How do you love the people in your life really well? And you need to pursue peace. Timothy, this is what's important. These are the things that you need to do. He says, how are you going to do that? By enjoying the companionship of those who call on the Lord with pure hearts. It matters who you make that community up of. And I don't care if it's a romantic relationship or it's a friendship or it's a work relationship. However you set that up, it matters who you invite into your life. It matters who you invite into your families. Some of you are single parents. Single parents, it matters. It matters so much who you are inviting into those relationships and who you are introducing to your kids. Sometimes we look and we find the warmest body and the fastest person who will show us a little bit of love and kindness, and we say, this is the person because I'm hurt, I'm lost, I'm lonely. And we just go for that first person instead of actually measuring up and saying, is this the right person? Is this the person I want to invite to my kids? Is this the person that I want to invite into my families? Is this the person that I want to spend time with? Is this a person that's going to help me grow in my relationship with God? But too often, we're just not picky enough. And we just, someone shows us like, oh, they got a great sense of humor. Why don't you come be a huge part of my life? Oh, they're really fun to be around. Why don't I give up all my time and bring this person along? Guys, it matters so much who we invite into our lives. So yes, is community important? Is companionship important? Absolutely. But you have to make sure that it's someone that's going to help you pursue righteousness, faithfulness, love, and peace. Someone that's going to help you grow in the core values of who you are. Someone who is like-minded with you. Someone who shares your core values and your faith and the things that matter most to you. Community is a huge deal. But you have to stop and pause and ask, who am I inviting into this community? So, with that being understood, let's walk into our next steps today. There's two of them. You can go to your Church Center app. And the reason we tell you this is we would love for you, if you're taking these steps, let us know so we can be praying for you, so we can come alongside you. So you can go to your Church Center app, or you can use that bulletin that you got on the way in. But here's the first one. It's as simple as that. I need to take the step of reaching out to someone to spend time with me. Some of you say, no, I'm way too shy to reach out to someone else. And this is where I'm going to come back to Ruth. If Ruth could do everything that Naomi did, then I don't think there's a single one of us that's too shy to ask someone, hey, can you spend a little bit of time with me? Hey, I've been really lonely lately. Can you just hang out with me for an afternoon? Can you just tap someone on the shoulder? Man, if Ruth can go and uncover some guy's feet and lay her face down next to them, any one of us can go and reach out to someone and say, listen, I just need some time. I just need to spend time with someone. Would you be that person for me? So if that's you, go ahead, let us know that you're taking that step, and we would love to be praying for you as you take that step. And then maybe here's where some of you are at, that I'm dealing with the hurt of loss in my life. And I just would like to talk to someone and have them contact me this week so I can talk about it. See, sometimes we have this loss in our lives and we sit on it for a while and then we don't know what to do about it. And sometimes we just need to talk it through. We need to vent about it. We need to verbalize it. And if that's where you're at and that's what you need to do, our team would love to be those people that you can have that conversation with. And so go ahead, let me know. Leave a phone number there so we can actually get in contact with you. And either myself or someone on our team will be calling you this week. I guarantee I will make sure that you are called this week, so that way we can just set up a time, and all we're going to do is just listen, to be there for you, and however we can. But we want to care for you. We want to be able to just be that shoulder for you that you might need, and be that ear that's ready to listen. So let us know. We would love to be that for you. But